Good morning from the Alaska Public Radio Network. This is a special live call-in program. Every month, APRN brings you Governor Steve Cooper to field your questions for an hour. Today, we have a special two-hour call-in featuring three of Alaska's political leaders. At 10 o'clock this morning, Governor Cooper will be joining us in APRN's Anchorage studios. But for this first hour, we have Senate President Tim Kelly and Speaker of the House Sam Cotton. The governor would have liked to make this a joint three-way call-in for 2 hours straight, but the oil disaster in Prince William Sound has kept him out of town today. So for the first hour, you can ask your questions of Senator Tim Kelly and Representative Sam Cotton, and then Governor Cooper will be available at 10 o'clock. The number is the same. It's a toll-free call, 800-478-TALK. In straight digits, that's 800-478-8255. And the reason we're having this special call-in is to let you get your questions on the size and shape of state government in Alaska directly to three of the people who will have a lot of impact on what that government will look like next year. Alaska started this fiscal year with oil prices below the level needed to balance the state's $2.3 billion budget. By the time the legislature convened in January, we were facing an estimated billion-dollar deficit. Oil prices have gone up since then, and based on the consensus revenue forecast and the governor's revised budget recommendations, the Office of Management and Budget is now pegging the deficit at about $550 million. The Department of Revenue has also finished its spring revenue forecast, and they'll be released soon, and those forecasts are expected to reduce the deficit even more. One of the questions now facing budget makers is whether to push ahead with some of the long-term fiscal belt tightening that was talked about in January, or take the easier option, which is to spend a few savings accounts and make a few budget cuts and slide by for another year. Of course, that's only one of the questions. There's a lot of others, and we'd like to hear you ask them. The number is 800-478-TALK, 800-478-8255. Our lines are open, and thanks to both of you for taking the time out here to join us. I want to just mention, first of all, start things off with a quick question on the oil spill. Of course, that's dominating the media attention here and a lot of people's attention, the slick up in Prince William Sound. You both attended a briefing last night on this, and what do you think this is going to mean for the legislature and the budget making and other issues? Sam Cotton?
Well, I'll say that Senator Kelly and I did organize a legislative briefing, and one of the first questions we asked was, how can we help? What legislative action is required at this point? And the first thing that comes to mind usually is an appropriation. We were informed by the administration that, no, they didn't need an appropriation right now, but that the Department of Fish and Game and the Department of Environmental Conservation had been directed to move ahead with the whatever action was necessary, and as a result, there will be some extra expenditures there that we'll probably have to deal with, not immediately, but at some point before the end of this session.
Right. Now, the obvious area would be environmental conservation. They're the lead agency in this.
They are the lead agency, but the Department of Fish and Game is also very concerned with the protection of some of the the fishery openings that are about to happen. There are three or four of them that are potentially threatened immediately, and so the efforts now have been toward containing and protecting specific sensitive areas. So there may be a need, for instance, to hire additional personnel or purchase additional equipment that might not be there at the moment, or transport equipment in. So there will be some other expenditures there that hadn't been budgeted for that we'll have to deal with.
Okay, Senator Kelly, do you agree that this is going to create some added budget pressures on the legislature here?
I'm not sure that they're going to create added budget pressures per se. I think that the case against Exxon and Alyeska is reasonably clear. I think it might end up in court, but I think before it's all said and done that the state of Alaska is going to recover full cost of any money we spend in prevention or cleanup from Alyeska and Exxon. So I think whatever we have to spend, we're going to get back. So I don't know if we're going to have a budget pressure to that regard. However, I do think that as a result of the spill, that we're going to be looking much more carefully at the requests of the DEC, and I suspect that there will be increases in that area. Of course, the big emphasis right now out in Prince William Sound is to contain further spillage from the tanker and protect those critical fishing habitat areas that are in danger right now.
Okay.
We don't want to do anything in the legislature that will detract from that primary effort right now. And we've consciously not flown to Valdez as a group and to try to posture and hold public hearings and that sort of thing, because the people that really know the answers to the questions we're interested in are all working hard on the spill or to keep the pipeline open or to make certain that a reoccurrence of the problem doesn't occur. So yeah. I think that as things settle down, as we get into a routine on the cleanup, and I understand yesterday that Exxon hired a company to clean up, and they're looking for 1,000 people here in the Alaska area, and I understand they're going through union halls and job service centers, so anybody in Alaska right now that's looking for work, I think, should contact their local job service center, and perhaps they can be one of those people that get hired to be sent out there to clean up the spill. But I think that, you know, as things settle down and we start getting some answers to some questions that we all have, I think you're going to see some legislation develop in the legislature. There's a great deal of anger in the legislature into what's looked at as just carelessness and negligence. And you know, I think everybody understands an accident.
Mm-hmm.
But an accident that's simply human folly and perhaps a complacent attitude is simply not acceptable to any of us. And I think that those responsible are going to have to pay. They're going to have to pay, you know, the full cost of the cleaning up the damage, and then you have to pay economic damages to the people that have been impacted. And I think that's quite clear, and I think the legislature is united on that.
All right. And we have a caller on the line from Wasilla. Wasilla, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. This is Ben Thompson calling from Wasilla. And my question is to Representative Sam Cotton. I'd like to know, how did the Prudhoe Bay and Kaporik fall into the current marginal field loophole, and how House Bill 118 and Senate Bill 97 will affect our local and state economy if passed or not passed?
Okay, Mr. Compton, thanks for the question. You're referring to the House Bill 118, more commonly referred to as the ELF, or Economic Limit Factor, which is a factor that's used to reduce severance taxes on fields that are in decline or considered marginal. But the way the law is written right now, it also applies to Kaporik and Prudhoe Bay. And I personally don't favor having the Economic Limit Factor apply to Kaporik and Prudhoe Bay. Feel that it's an undeserved tax break for those two fields. The bill the House passed would bring the taxes back up to the level they were 2 years ago in 1987 and reduce taxes on other fields that are truly of a marginal status. The how this would affect Alaska's economy, there's a lot of different opinions on that. The oil industry suggests that if the bill passes, they would invest less dollars in Alaska generally and in Prudhoe Bay and Kaporik fields specifically. Many of us don't agree that that would take place. We feel that this is wouldn't be so significant as to affect investment decisions there. Rather, the price of oil would be more of an influence on those investment decisions. And the more marginal fields that would receive the tax breaks, at least one of them, Milne Point, may be able to get back online as a result of this. I'm not saying that would be the only factor involved, but it would be a major assistance there. It's also been pointed out that these marginal fields are probably more labor-intensive. As a result, they would probably create other additional benefits to Alaskans in the form of additional jobs.
Senator Kelly, you have anything you want to add to that? That bill is in the Senate now.
No, the bill came over from the House and it was referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Senate Oil and Gas Committee and the Senate Finance Committee. And there's less support in the Senate for the ELF bill than in the House. And we'll have to see what happens. But the last go-around on the Senate version of the ELF bill, which was a little bit different, it didn't have the support to come out of the Oil and Gas Committee, and frankly, the support at that point in time wasn't there on the floor of the Senate.
And do you think that may have changed? You specifically said at that time.
Well, I think that there's a significant anger at the, I don't want to say the oil industry as a whole. I think, you know, we'll reserve that to Exxon and Alyeska. I think there's significant anger in the legislature. I think probably deservedly so from what I've heard to date. And I suspect that could change some judgments. We'll see.
Okay. We have another call on the line. The number once again is 800-478-TALK. This is a live statewide call-in program with Sam Cotton and Senator Tim Kelly. Senator Kelly, I think this next question is for you. Kachemak Bay, please go ahead.
Yeah, Senator Kelly, this is Larry Smith, and I'm glad to hear that the Senate might take another look at the ELF, because there has to be some way, in my view, to pay for no-hold-barred kind of monitoring and response to possible oil spills like this one. And I'm not satisfied to think that we ought to just depend on the oil industry or regulation. I think that maybe the state ought to be in that business, and the oil industry ought to provide the money to the state through revision of the ELF or some other kind of taxation, so we're ready to go the next time these things happen. Right now on that subject, if there was money like Cotton was talking about to put more folks to work, the way to start is with that set of environmental contractors that spent so many years working up here. I know Exxon hired Dane some more, and that's kind of too bad. I'd rather have them working for the state in case we're going to get a lot of litigation about this stuff. But there's other things to be done. You know, if there was a way to use volunteers on pretty remote islands, it strikes me you'd probably have to have the National Guard put in camps for that. And I'll tell you that the local fleets have got a lot of old gear. And we proved in Cook Inlet during that spill that gillnets, even salmon gillnets, can pick up a lot of oil. They clog up rapidly when that oil is emulsified. So especially that herring gear over there could be used for protecting specific bays and passages, for instance. And there's a lot of that gear around the state if there was a way to replace it before folks had to go fishing in other areas, and also a way to sanitize the vessels that might get involved. And we could go out there with a hell of a lot of boats and gillnet and seine a bunch of that oil that the industry doesn't have the booms to contain. Anyway, we hope you guys are going to concentrate on that. I'd like to see the governor jump right in and take charge of this operation for the state. And not that Jenny Kelso's a bad guy, but I think we need the governor on this, and I think the legislature ought to just suspend all unnecessary business until we see how we can minimize the damage that we're going to get from
okay. From thank
there.
You, Mr. Smith. Senator Kelly, what are your comments on that?
Well, I agree with them. The governor, of course, has been working very closely with this problem since it happened, and he's been in Valdez several times. He's in Valdez right now, and I think that the Department of or the DEC has done an outstanding job since the tanker ran aground, and I think that the state of Alaska, when all is said and done, is going to realize what a good job they have done, and I think kudos are going to end up going to Governor Cooper and Danny Kelso and the DEC for the attempt to make the best out of a terrible situation. Mm-hmm. It's clear to us, I believe, that we can no longer count on the industry to clean up their own messes. There was a plan. They said they could implement the plan, and when push came to shove, the plan was not implemented. And so it's clear to me there's going to have to be a larger state role, and perhaps we'll have to set up at state expense and somehow funded by the industry some type of reserve capability that something like the National Guard, frankly, if not the National Guard, that can on a 24-hour notice or a 6-hour notice be anywhere in the state of Alaska with the equipment necessary to contain early. Mm-hmm. One of the big problems, I'm not sure that you can contain 11 million gallon spill. It's just that's very, very difficult to do.
Extremely dangerous, too, with all the vapors and fumes.
But it's also clear to us that the effort wasn't there early when it should have been. And if we can't count on industry to do it, then the state is going to have to make those arrangements, and it will become a cost of doing business in the state of Alaska.
I'm not sure if this is exactly what Larry Smith had in mind, but he did start off talking about the ELF, and then he said we ought to find a way to put some state monies towards better monitoring. What if that were suggested? Do you think the Senate would be more amenable to passing the ELF or something like it if they knew that the money would be going towards this kind of monitoring activity?
Well, if we want to directly monitor and provide for spill cleanup crews, then we're going to have to put more money into the effort than we have in the past. But I don't necessarily think that has to be ELF money. You know, there might be other areas that we can set up, other fee schedules or special assessments that can be levied to pay for those efforts. I think that's the direction that the Senate would prefer to go, mm-hmm. rather than an overall tax. Remember now, the Senate's position is that what we have to do, rather than continuing to increase dependence on the oil industry, is to, over a period of time, decrease that dependence. And that means cutting the budget and not instituting, until absolutely necessary, major new taxes on either the private sector or the public sector.
All right, the number 800-478-TALK. It's a live call-in program with Senator Tim Kelly and Representative Sam Cotton. And we have a caller right now from Anchorage. Please go ahead.
Yes, the first thing that I thought about was the legislation that passed maybe 15 years ago to that the state of Alaska would underwrite the insurance for the oil tankers coming out of Valdez. And I thought it was brilliantly conceived, and it went through the political process by our elected representatives, and the Democrats controlled both houses at that time, and then I think it went into law, and then it was overruled, I believe, by Judge Fitzgerald as interstate commerce. Now, have you thought about reviving that legislation, because it gets the state of Alaska involved in monitoring and protecting the oil tankers, and also it puts you back in the business of directly affecting the tankers that come out of Valdez.
I think the caller's talking about what was known around here as the tanker bill, I think, back in the late 70s, which was taken to court by the industry and other people and ruled unconstitutional, but still portions of that are still in effect today in a different version.
This is Sam Cotton again. As you might guess, we've been looking at some of the statutes just in the last couple of days here to remind ourselves of what is there and what the rules are now. And a couple of them come to mind. Last year, we passed a bill that rewrote the requirements for contingency planning. We authorized the Department of Environmental Conservation to require exercises and require proof that they had access to the equipment necessary. But it's been suggested that the laws weren't tough enough as far as penalty provisions, and that, again, the Department of Environmental Conservation has been historically underfunded. The other thing that has come back and we've had another look at is the civil penalty section that was authored, I think, by Chancey Croft back in 1977. And the whole purpose there was to suggest to the industry that there would be such a large civil penalty involved with a major spill like this that they shouldn't do it. I think we recognized then that large spills, there'd be at least a good chance that we wouldn't be able to effectively deal with them. So the civil penalty sections require $2, and under these circumstances, $2.50 per gallon, and we're talking about over 10 million gallons, times a factor of 5 if gross negligence is involved. So with a limit of $100 million. So under these circumstances, in my opinion at least, the gross negligence would apply and that the $100 million lid would be reached. But it wasn't so much that we wanted to get money out of this situation. It was more of a prevention. If the industry faced a $100 million fine as a result of a spill like this, surely they would go to great lengths to prevent it from happening. But apparently they didn't.
All right, we're listening to a live call-in with Sam Cotton and Tim Kelly. It's 800-478-TALK, and we have a caller on the line from Fairbanks. Fairbanks, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is for Senator Kelly or Representative Cotton, either one. This is Tom Firth calling from Fairbanks. My question is, what was the state's role in the first place in seeing that the safeguards were in place, and what are those safeguards? What department is responsible for monitoring these? And for instance, we had a barge that was responsible for cleanup that was in dry dock, and the supplies were offloaded, et cetera. And who, you know, why wasn't there a backup barge? And why, you know, this is our own backyard, and you don't leave an industry that's on probation really unmonitored. And I was just wondering, like, what is the state's role?
Well, frankly, we're looking into that same question. We had some hearings last night, and we heard something about that question was asked last night. The state's spill plan is administered by the Department of Environmental Conservation. They're responsible to make certain that the plan is in place, and then Alyeska, in this particular case, would be responsible in making certain that that plan were implemented in the event of a spill. There was a plan in place. There was a spill. The plan was not implemented. That's pretty much all we know right now at this time. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating the whole event. Congress announced today that they were going to come to Alaska and hold hearings on the event. So I think some of these questions are going to become clearer as time goes on. Right now, Alyeska and Exxon are concentrating on containing the spill from the tanker, protecting the areas, particularly the critical fishery habitat out there, and continuing the pipeline running and oil flowing at a reduced rate. And some of these questions, as time goes on, are going to become clearer, but the legislature has those same questions. We want to find the answers also. What we did hear last night was that the barge had actually been laid up rather than the original 2 weeks reported in the press. It had actually been laid up for 6 weeks. And we want to know why and how extensive were the damages.
All right, the call number is 800-478-8255. That's 800-478-TALK. And we have Tim Kelly and Sam Cotton here in the studios, live call-in from APRN. Someone on the line now from Homer. Homer, please go ahead.
Hi, hello.
This is Sam.
Okay, I know I'll make this quick. In experience, my husband has worked in the rig tenders in Cook Inlet, and we also fish. And he came home saying the mock cleanups that they do several times a year are not functional. They're not working. We've told the oil officials. We've told the tender companies, and they're not responding. So it was no surprise to us when we had the Cook Inlet spill, and it could not be dealt with. So I guess, in essence, what I'm saying is, no, we don't want to tax ourselves or the industry to death, but the responsibility should be laid where it belongs. It's with the oil industry. And I guess my concern is that everybody keeps speaking of this plan, this document that was in place. Well, we can all write any kind of document, but if it doesn't have any teeth and any dollars to go with it, plus the equipment, it's not going to work, right?
Yeah, I sure agree with that. And we're all, again, examining those plans and trying to make sure we understand it. There's not a lot we can do about what's happened so far, but we hope to be able to improve our system and prevent a similar situation from happening in the future. One of the things that was especially interesting last night was a question from one of the legislators to the folks at Alyeska. Why didn't you get over there immediately with your booms and contain that oil while it was still calm water? And there were some reasons that have already been discussed. They didn't have the equipment operational at the time. But the other thing they said was, well, if we did contain all that oil, 200,000 barrels right around the tanker at that point, it would be such a large volume of gas that would be evaporating that there would be an additional danger there. A big gas cloud could have formed over the tanker. And obviously, you know, there's some possible disasters associated with that as well. So my conclusion was, well, does that mean that you just can't fix it? Do you just have to accept the fact that there are some disasters that can't be fixed, regardless of a plan? I hope that isn't the case, but I can assure you that there's going to be a whole new cadre of experts on contingency plans and a whole new set of regulations proving that they can work if it's possible.
Yes, I agree with that. There aren't going to be any blessings out of the Valdez incident, but there are going to be some lessons learned. And I think you're going to find that we're going to have a bunch of homegrown Alaska experts on oil spill containment and cleanup. And I think that that's going to result in an effort that will be established by the state of Alaska, paid for by the oil industry, that will be ready to respond to a spill within state waters at a short moment's notice. I don't believe that we could any longer rely on the oil industry to do that. I think that's been proven in Cook Inlet, proven again in Valdez. I think that's a real disappointment to a lot of us, and I think the state is going to have to respond. But we will respond, and we will be ready to go if and when a disaster like this occurs again.
Okay, we have a call now from Whittier. Whittier, please go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Cotton, I'm a fisherman from Whittier, and I would like to enlist your assistance in saving two of the most beautiful areas on the planet, Port Wells and Port Nelly Juan, which both have hanging glaciers and tidewater glaciers and are some of the most productive waters around. There seems to be a problem. These two areas have not been hit by the oil yet, but the oil company, Exxon, has not taken any steps to protect the areas. There are two bottlenecks in that outflow from those areas, Port Well and Port Nelly Juan, of approximately 4 miles. And the oil companies can save those areas and keep the oil out if they spread booms across those areas. Presently, they're using these rope booms, and I'm afraid they're not of sufficient strength to protect those areas where there is a high tide, when there is a swift tide and often strong winds. And I would request that you use your influence to get the oil companies to immediately place booms across the mouths of Port Nelly Juan and Port Wells of sufficient strength, cable and logs if possible, to protect those areas. I was wondering if you might be able to assist in that project.
Well, I'll tell you what I will do is I will get a hold of the of our state folks. They explained to us last night that there's a three-party operational team now, Exxon, the Coast Guard, and the state of Alaska, and they're jointly making the decisions that that are taking place right now in the Sound. And some of those decisions they described to us last night are, first of all, the realization that they can't stop the entire slick. They can't clean up everything, so they're concentrating their efforts on some specifically or some particularly sensitive areas. Now, Port Wells and Port Nelly Juan may or may not be on their list. I will forward this information to them and pass your suggestion along.
Yeah. Well, they seem to be creating the bottleneck of not having enough booms or not having booms of sufficient strength, and they ought to let the ingenuitive Alaskans save their own territory. It's really shouldn't be left up to those bumbling fools to protect our wilderness and our resources. We should be allowed, or there should be state money put out immediately to construct booms of native materials using our own cable and our own trees to keep that oil out. And it's still possible if immediate action were taken. And there's plenty of fishermen who are sitting around twiddling their thumbs trying to get out there and help, but the oil companies won't let us. They've created a bottleneck by not having booms here for us, and they're not letting us get out there and work. And I wish, and I'm sure all of these other fishermen with boats just raring to go would like some assistance from the state in constructing these booms to save this pristine and very productive area. There's hanging glaciers, there's all kinds of tourists going to these areas in tour boats, and they just won't come around if it's all covered in oil.
Well, I think you've made a couple of real positive suggestions there, and again, the decision-making is now being shared by the state, the Coast Guard, and Exxon. So I will forward those suggestions, and again, I think it's good that you've pointed out these particular areas, and I will make sure that they understand your concern there, and again, pass on your suggestions.
Well, the quickest way to get that point across to the state folks is to call again when the governor's on between 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock, of course. I mean, I'm sure that Dennis Kelso is right there, and again, after a very, very disappointing and slow and probably negligent start, this new command structure between the Coast Guard, Exxon, and the state of Alaska appears to be working well. They appear to be responsive to the needs of areas such as you're talking about, and I think if you can get that message to them, and certainly will help from this end, that you'll see a different attitude now than you saw even 48 hours ago.
And in defense of Alaska, Alyeska somewhat, which is something not many people are doing right now, I don't think any of us sitting down here realize how incredibly toxic and dangerous it is to get out there in the middle of an oil spill, especially right after it comes off a boat like that. The vapors are highly flammable, and even if you wear the wrong kind of clothing, you can set off an explosion. So.
Yes, that's true, and that's why you train people,
right.
And that's why you have trained people ready to go and ready to respond, and they didn't.
It could hardly be better, because Governor Steve Cooper is just back from another visit to Valdez and Prince William Sound and a talk with federal officials. Before we welcome the governor, I'd like to remind you that you can call us toll-free from any place in Alaska. That toll-free number is 800-478-TALK. That's 800-478-8255. If you're in the Anchorage calling area, the number is 563-7733. Welcome back, Governor. We've already got a call on the line, but maybe before we can start, you can tell us a little bit about what you've seen in Prince William Sound.
Well, yesterday, Corey, I went down there again, and the oil spill had spread a great deal from the last time I was there. It had moved into places where it clearly jeopardizes the hatcheries in Prince William Sound. The night before, however, the principals of Exxon and the U.S. Coast Guard and the Department of Environmental Conservation got together and worked out a way to manage this operation. The logistics had been pretty difficult before that. We didn't have a very good impression of the management of it. Now I think we've got a command situation that's going to work. We had federal officials there yesterday, the Secretary of Transportation, the Administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency, Mr. Riley, and Admiral Yost, who is the Commandant of the Coast Guard. They asked me yesterday if I felt that a federal takeover was necessary. I told them that I didn't, just because the people involved had come to an agreement the night before. Now, of course, I've got no way of telling whether that agreement was caused by the fact that I had asked for a declaration of federal emergency or not, but it seemed to have a salutary effect, I'll put it that way.
I understand from people in Washington that presidential spokesman Marlon Fitzwater has been telling reporters that the boys in Alaska, as he calls them, the federal officials who are traveling here, have said that it's not as bad as they thought. Is that justified, or that has nothing to do with your change of from a federal disaster area?
Well, I don't know who said what. You get into trouble when you deal with anecdotal information like that, but probably they were referring to the command structure. Who's the question of who's in charge? And I think in the interim that had been worked out. That problem is not as bad as it was. It's not bad enough to call for a federal takeover in any event. So if that's what they were talking about, they're right. If they meant that the spill is well in control and that there's not much of a problem anymore, they're wrong, because the spill is all over Prince William Sound. It is headed for Montague Straits, and depending on wind conditions last night, it may or may not be close to some of the hatcheries that exist in Prince William Sound, which could have a tremendously detrimental effect on the fishing industry in this state.
Thank you. Let's turn to our first caller now from Anchorage. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you, Governor Cooper. We had a town meeting last night, and we're going to have another town meeting tomorrow night. We're coordinating with people in Valdez and Cordova and Fairbanks and going to get people in Whittier onto this situation. We have come up with basically a three-point plan. First point is cleanup. Second point is compensation. Third point is state management of all cleanup spills over 55 gallons. We need to take this over. It's our waters that are being soiled, and we need to be responsive. We got 55,000 gallons of diesel being spilled on the Pribilofs. We had to spill out on the Aleutian chain. We need to take command. Okay, here's our cleanup plan for one portion of it, okay? We need funding. Here's the deal. The way you clean up these spills when they hit the beaches is that you put an absorbent material on the beach when the tide...
I'm going to have to ask you to speed up your... to come to the point here.
Okay, I'll come to the point. We have an organization. We have a plan. We'll get the plan to you. Where's our money?
Well, I have to say that maybe I missed something, but I don't know who you are. Can you identify yourself?
Absolutely. My name's Michael Callahan.
And what is your organization?
Well, we just started it last night,
uh-huh.
Okay? We're calling it tonight Town Meeting for Oil Spill Cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
We are Alaskans, and we don't see anybody protecting our waters. The people in Cordova that I've been talking to need oil booms. They need money to buy those. They got 2,000 feet on hold at Unitec down there. They need $20,000 to buy those.
Let me interrupt you for just a minute,
sure.
If I may. You need to talk with Denny Kelso in Valdez. He's on the spot. He is effectively in charge of the logistics here. If there is material that's outstanding that we need and we need to get to Valdez, then you have to let him know so that we can get it up here. Money is not an object here,
but
a coordinated effort is an object here. And what we have to do is to make sure that all the efforts are being coordinated from one central spot. That's what the problem has been up until now. So if you have suggestions, proposals, or anything else, you need to get through, and I can pass that message along as well. But you need to get that information into Denny Kelso there. That's very important. Otherwise, it may well be that we don't have that information. If we don't, we need it. Let me expand on that just a little bit. One of the major problems that we have in this spill is the fact that when the spill took place, there was apparently not any information about where the necessary equipment was located, how we could get it to Alaska, where the expert personnel were, where the assorted materials were stockpiled. Apparently, we had no such information. When I say we, I'm talking about Alyeska Pipeline Company. They were the people who supposedly had a plan, a contingency plan for a spill of this magnitude. They said they had such a plan, but it's clear that they didn't, or if they did have one, they didn't do anything about it. So one of the problems we have is that we can't tell where the material is. So if you know where it is and it's necessary to our efforts, then by all means you should convey that information to our people. And you can do it through the governor's offices in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, or anywhere you can reach us, and we'll convey the information to Valdez. At the moment, it is very difficult to get telephone calls back in and out of Valdez. All the circuits are jammed. We took the initiative to get 48 new circuits put into Valdez just last week. Apparently, some of the reporters are jamming the lines, keeping the lines open for 24 hours a day, and that's not much of a help to those of us who are trying to get information back and forth. But if you've got information, then you get it to us, and we'll use it.
Our next caller is from Soldotna. Welcome, Soldotna. You're on the air with Governor Cooper.
Hello, Governor Cooper. This is Betty Farrelly. I live on the Kenai Peninsula, and I have been grieving over the loss of Prince William Sound fisheries and the wildlife that will be affected by this oil spill. And I'm really proud of you that you also have some righteous anger towards industry. It's about time we have some officials that are on Alaskan side, so not only on industry side. I was really upset that the oil company's only concern seemed to be in how fast the shipping lanes could be reopened so that the oil and profits won't be shut down any longer than need be. And I really liked what you said to the legislature when you told them you had ambivalent feelings over reopening the port until the cleanup got underway. I also would like to say that here on the Kenai, we also have a more insidious type of pollution occurring. It's not as much of a shock to the senses as what happened in Prince William Sound, but we have Carl Reller, who used to work for DEC and now works for ACE, has estimated that we have 6,500,000 pounds per year of toxic waste going into Cook Inlet from our industries out in North Kenai. That's legal waste being put out into the inlet, and I'd like to see this stopped because we need to protect our fisheries before it's too late. When Alaska is over with the oil boom, what will we have left but our fisheries? And what people will be here, except for the true Alaskans, but we won't have the true Alaska anymore. And one other thing I'd like to say is...
I'm sorry, we're going to have to ask you to cut it short to give more people a chance to talk.
Okay.
Governor, would you like to respond?
Right.
Well, yeah, thank you, Betty. As you know, over the last 3 years, I have made every attempt to increase funding for the Department of Environmental Conservation, although up until very recently, like last week, that was not a very popular stand, and I've been successful in doing so, by the way. And one of the reasons is because of the level of toxic waste and other environmental problems on the Kenai Peninsula. They were caused for various reasons, not the least of which was the fact that people just weren't very environmentally conscious back in the 60s when and 50s when some of the drilling took place down on the Kenai Peninsula. There are other reasons as well, but we want to devote as much of our resources as is necessary to clean up those environmental problems on the Kenai Peninsula, which have accumulated over the years. The specific problem that the caller referred to, the discharge from Nikiski and other places there, I have to confess that I'm not familiar with that particular problem enough to give a halfway intelligent answer, but I will get back to the caller. We've written her name down, and I will check on that as soon as the DEC people get away from the object of their immediate concern down in Valdez, and we'll get you an answer on that. Thank you for the call.
Thank you, Governor. Our next call is from Dillingham. Dillingham, welcome. You're on the air with Governor Steve Cooper.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
This is June Ingram, and I'm calling from Dillingham, and I have a comment.
Uh-huh.
This oil spill should be a lesson to all elected lawmakers in Alaska. Which is the renewable resource, fish or oil? To me, Bristol Bay is one of the largest fish-producing areas in the world. The majority of families in Bristol Bay totally rely on this fishing industry to live. I firmly believe that oil drilling in Bristol Bay should not be allowed.
Thank you. We have fought the drilling in Bristol Bay ever since we came, ever since this administration went to Juneau. We continue to fight it. We think it's wrong to drill for oil in a place that's as rich in marine resources as Bristol Bay is, and we'll continue to fight that one out. I have to say that the oil spill will probably make our chances for success a lot better.
Thank you, Governor. This is the Alaska Public Radio Network. You're listening to Governor Steve Cooper's monthly call-in. You can call the governor and ask any question or make any comment about things that concern the state of Alaska. The toll-free number here is 800-478-8255. Our next caller is from Kasiloff. Welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning, Governor. This is Scott Ersley with the Inlet Sam, and I'm a processor down on the Kasiloff. I've got some concerns regarding this spill, having had experience in Cook Inlet in the last spill over here, and I'm very concerned that because we aren't going to be able to get the oil off of the beach, that it's going to be coming back in the fish all season, and I think that there's a need for DEC, Fish and Game, fishermen and processors to sit down together before the season and try and iron out some of the problems and procedures on how we're going to deal with it. Because Prince William Sound is such a large volume fishery, it can be a real nightmare if you get any fish into the plant that have some oil on it and some of the places are going to can it. You get oil in the can, it's going to be a real problem with tainted product.
I agree with you, sir, and I think it's clear that we're going to have a some kind of test, and that the people who buy our fish are going to have to be assured that there's that those fish are not going to be contaminated because of oil. We can't have this spill be a major factor in reducing the value of Alaska salmon. That would make the disaster a great deal more than it would be otherwise. So I agree with you 100%. I think that we have to work out some testing method to make sure that we have a product that isn't contaminated by oil, and we have to assure our markets that we're doing that.
Well, so, Governor, it's going to be very difficult given our experience in Cook Inlet, short of checking each individual fish for oil contamination, to assure that that's going to happen, because all it would take would be one boat catching some of the fish or getting the oil on the fish, and by the time they get to fishing, the oil has a consistency of tar, and it sticks to the fish, and some places it looks just like bits of sand, and it's real difficult to see it, and the only time that you do is when the fish slide across something that the oil can stick to.
Right.
And so it's a real labor-intensive program. The processors are going to be really strapped for labor just to check all the fish coming through to make sure that it is oil-free before it gets into the plant, because DEC puts the burden right on the processor.
Well, maybe that's a bill that ought to be sent to the oil industry. There's no maybe about it, actually. My guess would be, and I'm not an expert in this area, that in Prince William Sound and the areas that have been heavily hit by the oil, there will have to be a very careful check maybe of every fish that's harvested there. In other areas that are not immediately in the path, then perhaps we can initiate some kind of method to spot check the product. Frankly, I think what we have to do is to satisfy the people who are buying the fish, and we're going to have to bring them in, the people who are marketing these fish in Japan, in the lower 48 and elsewhere. So this is going to be a major effort to assure the people who buy our Alaska salmon that we're not sending them a contaminated product.
We do have another call on the line, though, and this one's from Girdwood. Welcome, Girdwood. You're on the air with Governor Steve Cooper.
My husband and I have 5 limited entry permits in Prince William Sound, and I want to thank you for your support for the environment and for the fishermen, and I'm also sorry that you're not running for re-election. I know Exxon will pay those of us with permits. There's no question on that one. I'm worried about the small merchants of Cordova. They are going to be really hurt. Another comment is I'm going to see millions of dollars from Exxon put into Prince William Sound for environmental and fisheries rehabilitation. And I talked to a friend from Cordova today. He said that the Exxon Valdez started leaking again yesterday. I don't know how much, and I would like to know why it has not boomed.
There should... if there is a leak now, it isn't visible because I flew over it yesterday afternoon and there had been no reports of other leaks. There was a relatively small amount of discharge about 2 or 3 days ago, which was apparently related to the pumping operation, removing the oil from the Exxon Valdez and putting it in the Exxon Baton Rouge. The vessel should probably have triple booms around it because there are about 600,000 barrels, probably less than that, but as of last night, about 600,000 barrels left in the vessel. In any event, a substantial amount. It is boomed, but not very well, I'll put it that way. It was at yesterday, the priority was getting the booms down to the hatcheries to make sure that that the mousse and the froth that is highly toxic doesn't enter into the area where the salmon fry are to be released. We're doing the best we can with that, and I don't know what the situation is this morning. I haven't been able to get a call through this morning. All the circuits are jammed, but there should be a boom around the tanker. Whether it is or not, I can't tell because I haven't been able to get through. I came in from Valdez late last night.
Thank you, Governor. I think we have our caller from Carlock back on the line. Welcome, caller. Carlock.
Governor Cooper?
Yes.
Can you hear me well?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Are they going to let the fishermen help them clean up the area? How far do you think the area is going to reach?
Yes, we are using fishermen from Valdez and from Cordova now. They are helping us spread the booms around some of the most sensitive areas in Prince William Sound. The oil may be going past Montague Strait. If it does, it's hard to tell where it will go because the current goes by there. And there's certain eddies in the current that may well sweep it back toward the Kenai Peninsula. I don't know. I would be amazed if it got as far as Kodiak, which is where you are. But we simply don't know where that oil may go. It's a function of the weather. It's a function of the currents. And it depends a great deal on the winds as well. And we can't predict them. But there is some indication that much of the oil may be swept through and out into the Gulf of Alaska, which would at least be better than having it in Prince William Sound, where it can act like a pinball and bounce off the islands there and pollute Prince William Sound for years to come. We hope it goes out to the Gulf of Alaska. We don't know where it'll go from there.
Thank you. Oh, wait a minute. We have another caller, who we should bring on. This is from Anchorage. Welcome, Anchorage. You're on the air with Governor Steve Cooper.
Hello?
Yes.
This is Julie. When I heard about the oil spill, I was really angry for all the people's lives who rely on the ecosystem there and the fishing industry. And I wanted to say that it's great, the cleanup work that's being emphasized. And on the show, when it was in Juneau, someone said that there won't be any blessing come from this oil spill in Prince William Sound. And I wanted to encourage you, Governor Cooper, to look to our God because he's in the business of making good from the bad that people do. And thank you for keeping Alaskans informed, and I'll keep praying for you.
Thank you very much, Julie. I appreciate that.
Okay. You're listening to Governor Steve Cooper on the Alaska Public Radio Network. Our next caller is from Fairbanks. Welcome, Fairbanks. You're on the air. Hello, Fairbanks. Can you hear us?
Hello, my name is Bob Wilkinson, and I'm concerned about the oil spill, Governor.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to help if I can, but haven't been able to reach anybody to get in contact with to be able to offer my assistance. I know there's a lot of people out there like myself that would like to help. Who should we talk to?
Well, what's your address and phone number? You're talking to him.
Okay, my phone number, should I give it to you over there?
Yes, sir.
457-2485.
If you're not afraid of strange callers, somebody will be in touch with you, Bob. Thank you.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. You're listening to Governor Steve Cooper's monthly call-in on the Alaska Public Radio Network. It's an opportunity for you to ask your questions of the governor, to make comments. And a reminder that although the big news in everybody's mind today is the oil spill, this is an opportunity to talk to the governor about anything virtually that concerns the state of Alaska. Our next caller is from Anchorage. Welcome, Anchorage. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Randy Easley. I'm with Oil Spill Consultants, and first of all, I'd like to begin by letting the governor know that I certainly appreciate the stance that he's taken regarding the state's position on the oil spill. As a consultant with over 10 years of experience in oil industry contingency plans and response operations.
Mr. Easley, we're going to have to ask you to move this along rather quickly. We have a lot of callers waiting for the governor.
Okay, thank you very much. I firmly believe a lot of good work can be done. I'd like to offer my services to the governor and his staff to assist them in developing a program whereby this bill can be taken care of and future occurrences can be prevented. I'm at the state's disposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Easley. We'd like to hear from you, and please contact my office here in Anchorage, since you're from Anchorage, and let us know what you think.
Thank you, Governor. Our next call is from Kodiak. Welcome, Kodiak. You're on the air with Governor Steve Cooper. Hello? Anybody on the line?
Hello?
Hello.
This is Reverend Herb Schon. I'm a Lutheran minister in Kenai, and I'm calling to speak with the governor here to ask if the when we're finished with the immediate response to the oil spill here and all the emergency that has to do with protecting the shorelines and that, if we also deal with more thoroughly with the moral and the ethical implications of both companies and corporations who deal lightly with the Alaskan ethic as well as the biblical ethic, am I my brother's keeper? I think if the governor has a chance to be on TV and radio nationally, which probably will be an opportunity in the coming weeks, that an appeal be made also to the good employees of Exxon and others, as well as the millions of customers, to send in a sensible way, to send a legitimate but firm message to the people they're giving the business to, that that would question the implications of doing business with a company that deals lightly with the ethic, am I my brother's keeper? Here in Alaska, we have in our churches both people from the oil industry and environmentalists as well. And I think not only the way the oil spill came about, but the consequential events on how things have evolved have great moral and ethical implications. And I think this round the churches dare not be silent.
Thank you, Reverend Schon. They're good people who work for the oil companies, and they're good people who work for government. But corporate ethics is something that's very difficult to get a handle on, frankly. Most corporations are in place for the specific purpose of making the maximum possible amount of profit. And the ethical dimensions are, in many ways, secondary to the profit motive. We find that it's more effective to have rules that are enforced in terms of corporate responsibility than to assume that a high level of corporate ethics is going to be displayed. But I very much appreciate your comments, and I think that they will be very useful in the future.
We're out of time. We have no more time for more callers, but just one other question along those lines, Governor. How clean is clean? What is the state going to demand? I mean, in previous cleanups, and particularly in Cook Inlet, the cleanup has involved actually digging up a foot to 18 inches of gravel from the beaches and hauling it out of here. Is that what we're looking at?
Well, it's going to be a monumental task in Prince William Sound. As you know, that spill was about 150 times the size of the Cook Inlet spill. So if you thought that was labor-intensive, you haven't seen anything yet. I have to say that the type of oil spill that we saw today is very different from a relatively small spill, for instance, in a harbor. This is a situation where a tanker went aground, gaping holes were torn in the hull. You have to have different rules, and we're going to make them.
Thank you, Governor Steve Cooper, and this has been the Alaska Public Radio Network.
special broadcast has been made possible by the member stations of the Alaska Public Radio Network and Alascom, the one you call on. This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network. 10:15.